Hey guys, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight-figure e-commerce store owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, we're going to pick up where we left off from last week. Last week, I shared my experience, the goods, the bad, the ugly of launching Overlander.com over the last 6 months. It's a new brand that I was responsible for getting off the ground and backed by Auto Anything as well as Expedition Overland. And this week, I wanted to shift and talk a little bit less about some of the e-commerce and the business lessons and the private label lessons, and more so about some of the management and the people lessons that I learned. Big part of why I took on the project was wanting to stretch and grow in that area, probably manage teams of, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7 people at most. But this project probably had, if I counted all the people involved in it, I mean, 20 to maybe even 30 people at you know, if you, depending on how you count it. And so we had a lot of people involved in the project, and I learned a lot. So wanted to talk about the human aspect of that and some of the takeaways there. So before I jump in, I want to give a big thank you, though, to our friends over at Klaviyo, who make the show possible, powering the email marketing and SMS efforts of over 50,000 e-commerce store owners. They're definitely the most popular email marketing tool in our private community of experienced 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands. And for good reason, they've got, you know, they do a lot of things really well. Amazing layout engine, template engine, landing page builder. Probably their biggest thing, though, is just the unreal ability you can, with which you can segment your list based on what your customers are doing, based on what they've purchased, what they haven't purchased, based on what pages they visited on your site, based on how much they've spent. Most anything you could think of, based on their potential lifetime value, you can really fine-tune your email engine and dial it in what you just can't with other brands and other tools. So if you want to get started with them and start driving more revenue from email in a channel you actually control and own, and you don't have to worry about Facebook, Google, or Amazon shutting you off overnight, check them out. You can get started with them for free at klaviyo.com/ECF. That's klaviyo.com/ECF. All right, let's go ahead and dive into some of the lessons I learned on the management and personal front while launching Overlander.com. So one of the biggest lessons I learned, and I think I just noticed this more from watching myself and how I behaved, more so how my mind worked than anything, was that I feel like people have two different reactions when really hard problems pop up and get in your way. And the first one is to get frustrated, to kind of shut down, and potentially even to blame other people. And the other option is to take it in stride, take a deep breath, know that you can probably solve it, don't assign blame, and just figure out what the best path forward is. And it is really easy to be the first type of person, and it is really hard to be the second type of person. And everybody in the world wants to work with the second type of person. And I bring this up because I found myself, when you hit some of these big problems, especially when you're working with other people on complex problems where there's a lot of different, you know, dynamics in play, it's easy to be able to, when problems happen, to be able to point fingers or to be able to kind of get frustrated. And in my mind, I would find myself sometimes doing that when these problems popped up. And that was my gut reaction. And I had to realize, I had to acknowledge that and say, this is counterproductive. It's not healthy. It's not going to help you get over the problem. And it's not going to make you a great person to lead the team. So get over it. So anyway, I wanted to acknowledge that that's an easy thing to have happen when you have problems pop up, but it's the harder thing, but the absolute better thing to do for moving forward and also to be able to leading a team well and work with people well is to suppress that and be able to try to be the person that takes problems in stride, knows they're going to come, so takes them in stride, and tries to be someone who solves them as opposed to just getting frustrated and pointing fingers, because that never works. But I think it's so easy for that to be our natural reaction, because it's my natural reaction, but it's an important one to fight. The second lesson I learned was, and this is interesting, so this is the first time I have worked in a, you know, I'll get, you know, on a quasi-frequent basis asked if I do consulting work, and I don't. I haven't worked for anyone else in 12 years, 13 years since I started my business and left the finance world. This is really the only exception. And I did it, as I mentioned last week, combination of, you know, wanting to tackle the project. I liked the people that were behind it. I liked the niche, and I thought it'd be an interesting growth opportunity as well. But I found myself, you know, in this kind of contractor slash employee position that I haven't been in a long time. And one thing that I realized was that I really craved feedback on my work deeply. And if I hadn't talked to, you know, to kind of the management team or the people that I was kind of reporting to or responsible, accountable to, including Drew, for getting the project done. And what it reminded me of is, in my seat as a business owner and in that role, it's really easy to talk to your team, be like, oh, I haven't talked to my team for, you know, a couple weeks and we could talk, but it seems like they're doing fine. They don't need anything. And just to let that, it's easy to find a lot of time and allow a lot of time to pass, especially if you're working in a remote team without connecting with your team if you don't have any pressing things to talk about. And what I realized was that's really important. Even if there's nothing pressing, like checking in with your team regularly and connecting with them, telling them how they're doing for better or for worse, just kind of having that, keeping that rapport and relationship strong is, it's something that I craved. I noticed myself craving, and it's, which surprised me because I'm by all accounts, I'm a fairly independent worker. Like, you know, launching the business, I spend a lot of time in a room by myself in front of a computer working away. And usually, you know, not a big deal. But anyway, the takeaway for me was, as a business owner, make sure you're regularly checking in with your team, even if you feel like you don't have to, because your team is craving that. And it was something that I, you know, experienced viscerally that I, you know, haven't been in that role to experience in a while. So it was a good reminder. Lesson number three, being the CEO really is about setting a great vision and bringing a team together. And I say it's not for myself, but watching Drew Sinaki, he's a good friend, he's been on the podcast a bunch of times, and he's the CEO of Auto Anything, as well as the guy who brought me in to take the lead on launching Overlander. And it was amazing to see a couple of things. One, I watched him with an all-hands meeting that he managed, and he just did a really good job of setting a culture of being transparent with his team about what was going on. And I talked to a number of people who said the culture had gotten much better and was, you know, as a huge reason why the business had been doing better in Auto Anything. So that was cool to see. But it was also cool to see how he, for the Overlander launch, had the vision, brought a team together, let them run with it. And at the end, without him having to do a lot of handholding or really being crazy involved in the process, ended up with this site that just, you know, that got launched. And I thought that was super cool. He did it was cool to see that. And again, this is not something you've never heard before. You know, oh, Andrew, wow, amazing insights here. Being a CEO is about vision and leadership. Understand that that's, you know, obviously a cliche and kind of, maybe not cliche, but it's just a well-known thing. But it's different when you actually see it in your own life. You see it play out and you see the results happen as opposed to just reading about it in a book. So anyway, I just thought it was cool. Drew does he's done a good job with setting the culture there, along with Michael Epstein and others, who's the CMO there. And yeah, just it was a great reminder of what's possible when you set a great culture and you focus on vision and leadership and get the right team involved, what's possible. Lesson number four, sometimes you need to push people tactfully to get the best out of them. And again, probably not any groundbreaking lessons here. Shocker, Andrew, again, but there were at least a couple times where there were people on the team that I knew had more in them, and the work wasn't where I thought it should be. And so kind of having the backbone to be like, hey, yeah, this is, you know, we need these changes or this needs to be better, and pushing them on that and getting the better work out of them and not actually that much more time, it just stood out to me. And this happens with me too. I mean, this happened on a project too, where, and in my life, I don't always, especially when I think about positions outside of my own business, I don't always do the absolute best work I can. Sometimes I do, but there's definitely been times where I could do better and I need to be pushed to do that. So it was a good reminder for me, don't be a wimp, expect good work. And I didn't do this perfectly, but there's a few cases I did, and it, you know, the better work came out of it. It was gratifying to see. Lesson number five, which is a very important follow-up to the last lesson to push people, which is tone is super important, super important. When you're pushing people, start diplomatically and ratchet up the candidness and the frankness as needed. Minimum effective dose here in terms of strong-arming people. There's no reason. Sometimes some people are very sensitive to this and they get the message very quickly if you kind of insinuate that the work needs to be better. Other people, you pretty much need to say, hey, this is not very good. Please make it better. So, but, and you'll learn that pretty quickly, but use minimum effective derisiveness. Well, even better, never be derisive. Use minimum effective frankness to try to get that quality of work with minimal, you know, kind of tension between people. But even apart from that, just like tone was something that was interesting. There was one time where I was talking to somebody and I got grumpy on the phone because there was something that happened with suppliers that I was out of this person's control, but I got kind of upset and grumpy and was, you know, didn't have a great tone on the phone call, and I had to call back and apologize. And so when you're frustrated, it's important to watch your tone, because I felt like, you know, I was not as respectful as I should have been to this one person on the team. Also, there was another incident where someone on the team sent me an email that they didn't mean to be rude, but it came across as incredibly rude and dismissive as someone who was leading this effort. And I brought it up very frankly and addressed them with it. And, you know, we talked about it, we moved past it, it wasn't a big deal. But it was a reminder to me of how your tone can so often be misinterpreted in emails, especially if you're someone who is not overly sensitive to that. If you're not someone who regularly looks at your emails when you're talking about anything that might even potentially be considered a contentious issue or a sensitive issue, if you're not someone who rereads your emails or asks someone else to read them, you should, if they border on, you know, anything other than just basic stuff. And even so, just realize that tone can often be misinterpreted, especially via email. So be careful. And then also, you know, apologize when you're wrong. Like, I, you know, it's the person who had that awful tone reached out to me, talked to me personally and apologized. And it was absolutely credit to him for doing that. We got over it very quickly. And I tried to do that when I was when I was, you know, had a bad attitude and was dismissive about someone's work on a phone call, I apologized as well. And apologies can go a long way. So anyway, tone is super important. Be careful with your tone. Lesson number 6, big organizations are harder to get things done. And this is, you know, I probably was working with Auto Anything, I think is probably 100 people involved in this project were probably 10 to 15 people on the Auto Anything side. We had graphic designers and web designers, you know, all sorts of people on the outside of, we probably had, you know, across 3 or 4 organizations, probably had 30 people involved in this project. And the bandwidth overhead, not the bandwidth overhead, the organizational overhead and communication tax you pay when you have this many people in different roles, I'd never experienced it. And it just, everything takes longer. Coming to decisions takes longer, finding out who's responsible for what takes longer, kind of rallying people up, meetings, you have more meetings. It just, there's real truth to the just, yeah, things take longer when you have more people. And it's just a law of the universe. And so just be prepared for that and think about that when you're growing your business, when you're thinking about bringing more people into something, that you're almost always going to need more people to do bigger things, but just be prepared for it to be less efficient, because it's just, you can't run at the same speed when you're a 3 or 4 person team than when you're a 15 or a 20 person team. And I took a little adjusting to kind of get the hang of that. Lesson number 7, trust but verify, especially when there's a big gap between assignments you give and deliverables. And so this one comes from, you know, probably the thing that I would love to see that I feel like I didn't do as the leader a good job of ensuring was the quality of the actual individual product pages on the site. We had love our homepage, love our notebook and our kind of blog, love our category pages, but our product pages, they need more work fleshing out a lot of them in terms of just the media, the descriptions, you know, some of the compatibility issues with different products, all this kind of stuff. And when we were building those out, the process, the way it worked was myself and some other people put together a big spreadsheet of all the products that we were going to have on the website, handed it off to a team that spent the next 2 to 3 months kind of going out, getting the descriptions, getting the data, all the media to be able to import into the Shopify site. And we really, because of a bunch of things I won't bore you with, we really didn't see the end results of that until probably a week before we launched. And at that point, I realized that the things that I had hoped to see, the level of detail and descriptions and the amount of media wasn't where I had expected it to be. And ultimately, this was 100% on me because I didn't lay out my expectations clearly enough, but also I didn't check in and ask for little sample projects along the way. I trusted them to deliver something that was in my brain, but I hadn't done a good job of conveying, and or I didn't verify that the project was on, you know, was where I wanted it to be. And so usually I'm pretty good about this. Like usually if I'm if I have somebody on the team, on my own team for e-commerce fuel, start setting out on a big project, I'll have them do this. But I failed in this regard on this one. And I think the big takeaway is just, if you have big projects, one, scope them out well, or make sure you're very explicit about what you want the end result to look like, either using, you know, very clear criteria, or even better, maybe an example of what it should look like on the back end, if there's something you can pull up or something similar that you can show them. But make sure that the work, if somebody's going to do something 2,000 times, which is what they were going to do here, add 2,000 products, after they do 50 of them, you know, look and ask, or, you know, check in on that front. And I didn't do as good a job as I should have. And so as a result, the catalog wasn't as rich as it should have been. So anyway, trust but verify, and make sure that you are being very clear in your deliverables for projects. Lesson number 8 is multi-party deals are inherently difficult. Plan on it. And again, shocker here, but I was underprepared, I think, for the level of complexity that comes with when you have multiple people getting into business together. And so this was a business that was between Auto Anything and Expedition Overland, a company that this run by some friends of mine that does really high-end overlanding films. And even like with e-commerce fuel capital, which I'm going to get into in a couple episodes later this month, was the first time I've been a part of bringing multiple people together on the investor front, but even just on the operational front, having multi-member LLCs or having multiple stakeholders in a business. I've always run just an LLC I've owned completely. I've been able to call all the shots. It's been super wonderful in retrospect, because you don't have to, you just, whatever you want to do, you do. You don't have to worry about it. It also limits things, of course, in terms of the number of people that can work on it. But I mean, some of the things I looked at, like contract negotiations in this, were, they just took a long time, and they were complex, because you have two people trying to pair up on a partnership over the course of years. And there's a lot of things to consider. Trademark issues between different parties, defining roles clearly, who's responsible for delivering what. So I think the big thing I learned was that anytime you bring multiple people into a business with an ownership or a profit stake, the complexity does not go up linearly. It goes up exponentially. And so just be prepared for that. And I think the ways you can try to mitigate that is making sure you're getting into business with people you trust and or people that really add unique value, and being very clear about the roles everyone's going to play, and just plan on it taking a while to hash out, because it just does. Lesson number 9, I think, is one that a lot of people struggle with, and that's, you're likely hardest on yourself, and you should almost certainly give yourself more grace than you are. And I think about this project, and I kind of alluded to it a couple episodes back, but man, there's a lot of stuff I really beat myself up over. Some stuff, and some of it was merited. Some of the stuff was stuff that I should have done a better job on. Other stuff was stuff that, probably was outside of my control. And I was just something that came up that I didn't, I couldn't have impact. But there's a lot of things I beat myself up over, especially thinking, feeling like I had let other people down. But when I looked at other people, they weren't, no one else threw me under the bus. People understood. People were seeing, I think, that I was working hard on stuff. And when other people made mistakes that I knew were busting their tail on this project, and things didn't go perfectly, I didn't throw them under the bus. So I think giving yourself more grace, either with the team that you're working on or likely in your own business, is really important. And then finally, lesson number 10, it's really good to take an extreme ownership approach to your team and to your projects. And again, kind of circling back to point number 1, is there's two types of people, right? People that can point fingers when things go wrong, or people that when projects pop or problems pop up, they look at them, they take a deep breath, they tackle them with enthusiasm and gusto and in a collaborative manner. And it's really easy to be the person that points fingers. It's really hard to take problems in stride and work with a team to fix those. I think, the book Stream Ownership by Jocko, a lot of you are probably familiar with that. I'll link up to it in the show notes. He's a Navy SEAL who's talked a lot about leadership. That was really relevant, because again, it's really easy to point fingers, but ultimately if you're leading a company or a project or whatever it is, if it's not getting done well, it's ultimately your fault for one of many reasons. People generally work hard. There are lazy people out there for sure. There are incompetent people out there for sure. But generally most people want to do well. And so if stuff isn't getting done right, it's because there's not expectations that are laid out clearly, it's because you have the wrong person in the seat for that role. It's because you haven't prioritized things well, or you're putting up with work that you shouldn't, kind of going back to push people to get good quality. Like, you know, maybe it's an issue of you're not pushing someone to get, to get the best out of them. Anyway, it's easy to be able to dodge this, but I think looking at when problems pop up and saying, hey, ultimately, like, this is on, I need to be the one who is solving this problem. If stuff isn't working right, I need to step in somehow and either help it, help those people make it right, or replace the people, or push them more, or whatever it is. But I think that extreme ownership approach to your team or to any projects is a really good, it buck stops with you if you're at the top, and it's up to you to make, solve those problems that pop up to get you where you want to be. So great book. It was really applicable, I think, as I went through this process. I would highly recommend it if you haven't read it. So in review, top 10 lessons, number one, be the type of person that leans into problems and doesn't point fingers. Two, if you are managing a team, make sure you are checking in with your team regularly and giving them feedback, because your team is craving that if they're always craving that. Number three, being a CEO is really about vision and leadership. It really is. Four, push people tactfully to get the best work out of them. Five, tone is super important. Make sure you're careful with that. Six, big organizations are just slower. That's just the nature of life and business and more people. Number seven, trust but verify. When you have big projects, make sure you're very clear with your expectations, and also you're getting sample work as it goes along. Eight, multi-party deals are inherently difficult. Plan on it. Nine, you're likely hardest on yourself. Give yourself more grace. And 10, take an extreme ownership approach to your team. And if stuff isn't working out, figure out why it is on your end and what you can do, because ultimately you're the one responsible for it. So the people lessons, the management lessons were exponentially, for me, more valuable, and I think will probably serve me better than any of the e-commerce stuff that I learned in the project. And just a big thank you to everyone who helped make this possible. Jesse, Michael, Leah, Kurt Elster and his team over at EtherCycle, Sean, the whole AA team, and Drew as well. So I'm sure I'm missing some people in there. But yeah, thank you to everyone who was a part of this, making the project possible, for putting up with me when you had to. And yeah, it was a pleasure to work with you on it and get this out into the world. So hope this was helpful. Hope you enjoyed the episode. If you haven't joined us yet inside the e-commerce fuel private community, and you're a seven or an eight-figure e-commerce brand owner, we would love to have you. And I think you would find it's the best investment making your business this year for two reasons. First one is there's no place that I know about. We're the largest e-commerce community on the planet for seven and eight-figure stores. And the ability to get real-time answers to your questions, as well as tap into an archive of tens of thousands of past discussions on everything from sales tax compliance to Amazon suspensions, to how do you fire someone with minimal liability when they're not doing a good job, to importing, to trademark disputes, so many different things that can go wrong in a business. So many opportunities as well. There's no place, there's no community as large or as active with sellers of brands and owners of brands that are actually in the trenches doing this stuff. Secondly, and maybe just as important, maybe more important, is you're going to be able to connect with, if you give any meaningful effort to participating in the forums or coming to the events or doing local meetups that we help host, you will build out multiple relationships, meaningful relationships with people and friends who understand what it's like to run your business. People that get you, that understand the struggles and the highs and the lows of this. And it's that social network of people is incredibly helpful and therapeutic, not even just from a tactical perspective, from just an emotional support perspective. So it's a pretty cool place we've been able to help foster, and the people in there are incredible. So if that sounds interesting to you, you should come check it out and join. And you can learn more about membership and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. All right, that's going to do it for this week. Big thank you to Klaviyo for making the show possible. If you want to give them a test drive and supercharge your email marketing efforts, check them out, klaviyo.com/ECF. Really appreciate you listening. Work hard and adventure often, and looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.